This episode is brought to you by Windrose Recovery, a family of premier addiction treatment programs in southeastern Wisconsin. Privately owned, Windrose Recovery offers a full continuum of personalized care for those struggling with addiction, including the Manor for residential treatment, Midwest Detox for inpatient detoxification, and Windrose Counseling for outpatient treatment. With highly personalized treatment focused on trauma, Dr. Chantel Thomas and her expert team offer an authentic experience, creating the kind of deep emotional change that's crucial for long-term recovery. If you or someone you love is struggling with addiction, call Windrose Recovery at 414-409-5300. You can learn more about Windrose Recovery by clicking the link in the show notes or by visiting WindroseRecovery.com. Thank you for listening to The Path to Authenticity. My name's Tom Gentry. I think of this show as the opposite of small talk. You'll hear real conversations with real people who know who they are. We talk about what makes them who they are, how they became who they are, and how we might become truer expressions of who we are.
My name is Vare, and this is The Path to Authenticity.
To Authenticity proudly supports the I Speak Media Foundation, advancing media literacy education through an evolving series of outreach programs within the communities that need it most. For more information, visit ispeakmedia.org. If this is your first time here, thanks for checking it out. If not, thanks for coming back. I'm Tom Gentry, and this is The Path to Authenticity. Check out the new website, thepathtoauthenticity.com. Got lots of stuff going on there, including on the blog, 20 questions with today's guest, who is a singer from Quebec. Her name is Vare. Just a really cool young woman who's got an incredible voice, and you're going to get a chance to hear that here in a couple minutes. But we had a great conversation. She was, you know, great. I just reached out to her, found her on Instagram, and I've been wanting to have more musicians. That's always been a goal of mine with this podcast. So she was just fantastic and very engaging, easy to talk to, and was kind enough to share some of her music so that I could share it with you. So here we go. Episode 97, Vare.
All you want, the best for you, and I don't need you. I just want the best for you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Only the best. I just want the best for you.
Doing well. How are you?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you coming on the podcast. I love music. It's one of those things in life that keeps me from going completely crazy. And it just adds so much to our worlds if we let it, I feel like. And it's always been really important to me to have musicians on this podcast, and I've only really done it one other time, so appreciate you being up for it. And
oh my god, thank you so much for having me. I completely agree with that sentiment. Music is so powerful, and it's something that you can enjoy all by yourself, or you know, with large groups of people, and no matter how you consume it, it's always so special. So I'm happy to be here and to chat with you, and I appreciate you reaching out.
Yeah, and there's such an emotional aspect to it. It makes you feel, right?
Yeah.
It's one of the things I really love about it.
Absolutely. Depending on like where you are at the time in your life, like one song can make you feel one way, or can make you cry one day, or and a week later you're like, really, this moved me, you know? So there's so many moving parts to consuming music, but that's what makes it so magical, you know?
Yeah. And you know, it also can take you back to a place in time
for sure.
So easily. It's just the texture of where you were, who you were with. And you know, one of the things that I've kind of, for me personally, caught onto about music, kind of a gift that it has given me in my life. You know, being a guy, we're not supposed to shed tears, right? There's that whole BS thing, right, that we're not supposed to shed tears. But, you know, it's just a bodily function. We actually really need to shed for tears, sure, sometimes.
100%. I love crying. Yeah. Honestly, it feels so good.
Well, I don't mind it either. And, you know, I don't really care what people think about it, but
that's great.
Yeah. But one of the things that I caught on to, like, there are certain songs that I pretty much cry every time I hear them, or at least tear up every time I hear them. One of them is an American Pie, Don McLean.
Right.
And you know, when I was a little kid, I would hear that and I didn't even know who Buddy Holly was or Richie Valens was at the time.
Right, but
still, it's just so beautiful. And there are more, I don't know if you're familiar with Jason Isbell, but he's one of my favorite artists. There are a couple songs of his that just really choke up.
Know.
Yeah. He was in a band called the Drive-By Truckers. Mm-hmm. And then now he's more of a solo. He's kind of a, Americana artist, like kind of the modern country, like Sturgill Simpson, Margot Price. He's kind of part of that whole thing. But
anyway. I actually haven't spent so much time listening to country music, to be honest. Growing up, I wasn't surrounded by it, but recently in the last, you know, 5-ish years, I developed such an appreciation for the art of country songwriting. It's really just storytelling, and it's in such an interesting way. And when they released the show Nashville, I loved how like multifaceted that show was, and how it really showed you so many different sides of the music industry. Forget about the fact that it was country music, but there was such a good soundtrack, and it was so immersive, and I loved it. It made me really fall in love with certain types of country music. Right. I think there's different degrees of country. Yeah,
you know, I don't like the modern mainstream country stuff. Mm-hmm. I like old Hank Williams, old George Jones, and I like the guys.
Their own,
like,
you know?
Yeah, and then I like Roger Miller, if you know who that is. Some of the older artists, but then like Jason Isbell. I mean, he's really just a poet. I mean, nice. If you like lyrics, you got to check out his.
All right,
I'll send you some links. Yeah. So just to kind of finish my point. That as a young guy, it like gave me an acceptable place to shed tears.
I love that. Yeah.
You know, and I didn't realize it until well into adulthood that's one of those places that, you know, that sentimental sort of feel. It's okay, you know, for guys to get choked up when they're listening to a sad song or whatever.
So, yeah, absolutely.
I don't know. I'm pretty in touch with my emotions, and
it's so important. It's so good. I really wish that for so many people. You know, that's not something that should ever be associated with gender. It's just being a human. You know, and there's so many things that can evoke. You know, tears. Sometimes I cry at the randomest moments, but it's just for me a sign of like I needed to release, or there was a buildup and, you know, that energy needed to leave and something triggered it, you know? And music does that often. Sometimes I'll even like cry while I write a song, depending on, where I am in my life, when it's happening or what it's about. Not often to be honest, but it's happened, and it's so powerful, and I feel like that makes some really raw music, you know?
Yeah. One of the other times that it comes up for me is moments of triumph when I watch someone succeed, even if it's like a sporting event and you can tell someone really has their heart in it.
Yeah.
And you know, that moment when it happens, it just, you know, I don't know. It's like, I'm proud for them or something, you know?
But, yeah, you have that like empathy. I don't know if it's considered empathy if it's not about something sad, but you can feel for them whatever they're feeling.
Yeah,
whether it's an extreme happiness,
it's a connection. It's a connection, definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
And music definitely evokes connection. So
absolutely.
Now, so how long have you been singing?
Oh my gosh. Well, I started taking formal lessons when I was 12 or 11. So that would make it, you know, like 16 years ago. But I've been singing since I was, I think the first time I ever sang in front of anyone was, I think I was in third grade, and I was cast as this, I make it sound like it was this thing, you know,
Broadway.
Broadway. It was this like school, I won't even say play, but like a performance. And I was cast as Diane Dufresne, which is this French Canadian artist. So the first time I ever sang in front of a crowd in public was in French, which not many people know. And it was crazy. I always loved to sing. I grew up as a 90s baby. I grew up in like peak, you know, boy band, girl band pop, right? So like Britney Spears and the Backstreet Boys and Christina Aguilera and S Club 7 and all of these like super pop bands. And I used to always picture myself doing what they're doing for the most part. But I was always really shy about singing. I don't know why. I'm not really sure, but I was never a shy girl. But I was, there's something about singing that was felt maybe kind of sacred to me, and it's really vulnerable. And I guess I felt that without being able to articulate it as a, as a kid. And that moment, I think in the third grade, where, you know, it was my mom who kind of gave me that confidence where she's like, whoa, I didn't know my daughter could sing. And I guess I didn't really realize I could sing until I had that validation from somebody else. Yeah. And my mom's always been my best, and I want to say harshest critic, which is something that I actually value. So when she told me that, I was like, oh, okay. And then I got a little bit more comfortable. And then from there, it was like a slow process, to be honest. It wasn't like I was born with this voice, and I really worked at it. I worked at it. I worked toward the vision. And for some reason, I've just been chasing the life of a singer, an artist, a performer. I'm not really sure why. I guess I was born with that, you know.
Yeah. So where would you describe, at what place in your musical career are you right now?
That's such a good question, because it's so not linear and it's so unpredictable, right? Like I could have never predicted. I feel like no one could, you know, it's COVID times. I could have never predicted where I'd be right now. But I think that in my musical journey right now, I'm at a place that's like very, I kind of, interestingly enough, I feel like I'm in this authentic, independently creative space where I feel really in control over and confident in where I am. And I'm writing more. So I guess I could say that I'm in the, how would I phrase this? I think that if you would have asked me this right before COVID, it was like peak performance. I was doing a lot of weddings and events, and my vocal chops were the best they've ever been. My range was expanded, and I was doing anthems and this and that. And it was very like show busy. But now it's the complete opposite. So I don't know how long I'll be here for, but I've just kind of embraced this like home studio culture and isolated space and introspective space of just being an artist. And for me, being an artist is about being resourceful and kind of adapting to the time and writing about it. And that's where I'm at right now. It's not about the show. It's really about the introspection and just channeling it all and then getting creative. And what does it mean to be an artist when you can't perform in front of people, right? And I'm not talking about live streams, because for me, it's not really performing in front of people. There's something about an energy and the pressure of being physically in the same room as someone with the microphone. And like, I really consider myself a true performer, and I love that. I love that more than anything in this world, is getting up in front of a crowd of people. It could be 10 people, could be 10 million. It doesn't matter to me. I don't have that stage fright. I guess right now the stage I'm in is like an introspective and resourceful creative stage where I'm kind of hunkering down and working, you know, and really getting into the production more as well. And learning Ableton, which is a DAW, digital audio workstation, where people create music. Just absorbing information so that when things kind of get back to whatever the normal will be, I'll be in a new space as an artist, always growing, you know?
Mm-hmm. So what, in terms of output, what do you have that's out there, and where can people hear it?
So I'm on all streaming platforms. So whether that be, you know, Spotify, Apple Music, Tidal, Google, I think it's called Google Play now. I'm not sure. I'm pretty much everywhere. Yeah. Even SoundCloud, there's some stuff up there. Instagram, I post a lot of snippets and videos, and YouTube. Really working on the content game right now. Being an independent artist, it's you know, and truly independent, like no management team, nothing of that sort. It's, you're kind of stuck wearing a lot of hats. And that could involve, you know, from the creative, like singing, songwriting, music making, learning the instruments, playing the instruments, recording them, to then, you know, photography, videography, PR, marketing, like you're doing everything. So right now it's like, okay, how do I, you know, beef up my YouTube page? I should probably do some more covers. Like it's hard to keep up, you know, it's hard to cut through the noise and to interrupt people's scrolling, you know. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest challenge today, is kind of demanding attention in a sea of content.
Stimuli.
And it's all good. Yeah, for sure.
So now you told me you have an EP out. What's that called?
Yeah, it's called Bloom.
Mm-hmm.
And I released that, I think it was in May of 2020. And that was a moment for me. That was when I really feel like I found my sound in that project. I really didn't overthink music for the first time. And I wasn't trying to be anything. It just kind of happened. It really like blossomed. It came to life, and like the idea for it, the framework came to life in like 4 days. It just kind of happened, right? One song flowed into the next. And, I made that all out of my little home studio, with another producer. His name is, he goes by Slow Jams, and I'm proud of it. I like it a lot, which is very rare that I like the music I release after it. You're like, oh, I'm over it, you know. It's, yeah. Is it even good? But I like it. That's my dog. I think I scared her.
I would have guessed that was your dog.
Yeah, she's great. That's the latest project, and there's some more in the works. And that's where we're at right now.
So who are your musical influences, would you say?
Oh my gosh, that's wide ranging. I think like in terms of modern influences, like more current influences, it's artists like Snow Allegra. She's really cool. If you haven't had the chance to check her out, I recommend it. I mean, I love Billie Eilish and her authenticity, you know. Mm-hmm. This podcast called The Path Authenticity. So I figured I'd throw that in there. She's so, so cool at just being herself, and it's really cutting edge, I find. I would say, you know, Amy Winehouse is and always has been, an inspiration, a musical inspiration. Loved her. Her sound, her lyricism. And on a completely like different end of the spectrum, I'd say Freddie Mercury. Mm-hmm. It has always really been an inspiration. You know, he defied odds in so many ways, and he didn't let anything, you know, get in his way. He was very, you know, hard headed and mm-hmm. perseverant. He made it happen for himself in a day and age where it was not easy, especially, you know, for someone like him. And, his showmanship and, oh my God, there was something about Freddie Mercury. I feel like if he were alive today and we met somewhere, I'd probably be at like some crazy club. We would hit it off. We would be best friends or something. I'm not sure, but I really love Queen and what they did at that time. So definitely, like, even though I sing kind of R&B, chill pop type genres, I really take influence from so many different genres. I think there's a long list, but yeah, I think Charlotte Cardin, she's a Quebecois artist as well. I take a lot of inspiration from her music.
So one of the first guests I had is a Quebecois. Her name's Mimi Langlois, and she is a abstract expressionist painter.
Cool.
Of some notoriety in Canada, I think. You know, I mean, she's in galleries in New York and Palm Beach.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's so cool.
Yeah, she's pretty awesome. So
nice.
Yeah, so you're not the first Quebecois. Am I saying it correctly?
Yeah, I mean, depends who you ask. It's good enough for me.
Okay. So you have more more output that you're that's in the works right now? More songs that you're writing?
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm actually working with a producer from England. I'm not going to spill too much about that right now, but it's in the works, and it's very exciting. He found me actually haphazardly, found my work after I released Bloom, and it was kind of this like kismet, I would say, like connection there. So there's a more full length album on the way, but I'm also just writing. I'm writing without, you know, a particular purpose, you know, an expectation. I'm just trying not to put too much pressure on myself and just write for the sake of writing. And then, you know, I won't overthink it. I'll just release it if it's good, you know. I'm going to release a couple more singles probably before I release another full project. Yeah.
Now, in terms of songwriting, do you have mentors? How have you learned to write songs?
Yeah, it's a great question. I definitely have mentors. I learn every time I hear a song. I love clever songwriting. It's so cool. It's amazing to see how creative people can get with their words and the phrasing and I'd say Julia Michaels has always been a really big inspiration. She writes for so many pop artists, and recently not so recently, but she decided to also follow the artist path. So now she's writing her own music, and it's brilliant in its own way. It's so raw and it's honest. And she's definitely one of my songwriting inspiration mentors. And, you know, also my friends that are releasing music, it's easy to connect with music when you also know the person. So I definitely take inspiration from my closer circle. And I also take some songwriting like courses. I read online, I read blogs, I watch, you know, I love the like seminar that John Mayer gave at Berkeley in 2008. I've watched that a couple of times, honestly. He gives some amazing advice about songwriting. I'm taking this course called Holistic Songwriting, I think it's called. I'm taking this course. I'm listening to this audiobook, which is like a course. It's all like a blur these days, to be honest. It's called The Addiction Formula, and it's really great. So I don't know if you can like count on learning songwriting to be a good songwriter. I think that to be a good songwriter, you have to dig deep within yourself and use your own form of expression. You need that authenticity too. Like it helps to have tips, and you know, when you feel like you're at a creative block, it helps to have something to resort to. And that's something you can learn from others. But when it comes to actually writing, it's just you and you, you know, unless you're co-writing, but really it's like, that's where your authenticity comes into play. And that's what makes one artist, you know, different from the next. So I think just living life and learning to take it in and process it is a huge part of songwriting. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if you, have you heard of Wilco? Do you know about Wilco? It's an American rock band, kind of modern. They've been around a long time though, but the lead singer, and the guy who started the band is a guy named Jeff Tweedy. And he recently, released a book that's called How to Write One Song.
Oh, that's so interesting.
Yeah. And with, you know, the idea that, you know, no matter how many songs you've written, you only write one song at a time. It's you know, and it's, you know, kind of being there for it and being open to it and trusting yourself.
Yeah.
And not listening to the negative voices, and then just kind of following your own path, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely easier said than done. Yeah. There's many times where I'll sit down with the intention to write, and sometimes it just doesn't happen. You know, yeah. I think the best advice I got was to let the inspiration hit you. And if it doesn't, if you have to try so hard, and if it's not happening, you have to abandon it, right? Like, otherwise, that comes through in the music. It comes through that it wasn't natural, right? So I guess that the trick is to really have that. It's not necessarily self-awareness, but that awareness of when you feel it coming on, to have access to a creative outlet and channel it and then record it, even if it's just like a voice note, but finding different ways to be inspired and then kind of increase the chances of getting inspired. You know, I find the more I read, the more I play piano, the more I do things in the creative space, the better chance I have at actually writing better, writing more. It's just kind of exercising that part of your brain and listening to music too, like listening, consuming other people's music really helps your own creative flow too.
Have you studied other forms of writing? Do you write other things? Have you studied poetry?
I haven't studied poetry, actually. I've started to journal more, but I haven't studied forms of writing. I mean, I definitely took writing courses in like college and stuff, but that wasn't like a voluntary, like I wasn't in the headspace of doing that for the greater purpose of one day being a better songwriter. I've always wanted to go to Berkeley. When I was younger, when I graduated, it's called Cégep in Quebec. It's kind of like that awkward 2 year between high school and university when you're figuring yourself out. So after that 2 years, I wanted to go to Berkeley to study songwriting. And then long story short, it cost a fortune. So I got in, which is nice. It was at least I worked really hard to get into that school. And at the time, you know, I thought that's exactly where I need to be. And there's nothing else I want more in this world. And, it's funny how life works, how hindsight is so 2020, but, I was trying to go after a degree in music for like, who knows how many tens of thousands of US dollars a year, which, you know, at the time definitely didn't have. So didn't do that, but there's other ways to learn. And that's what I realized is if you want to learn, you definitely can today. There's so many ways to take in information and to expand your skill set. So I'm not so discouraged anymore.
Well, and you know, one of the things that comes up a lot in this podcast is that, you know, there are these scripts that we tend to follow in life, in our culture, which include, for many people, going into deep debt to gain an education that they may never use and might not ever even be that specific to what they actually want to be doing with their lives. And, and I think you're right. I think if you want to learn how to do something badly enough, you're going to figure it out. You're going to find a way. You're going to find the people. And, some of the universities haven't existed. I mean, there are a lot of, I'm thinking of like Abraham Lincoln, America, you know, these are people who are like self-taught, like they, they read as many books as they could. That's how they learned.
Right. And it was so much harder to learn back then too. Like right now, everything is so accessible. And I feel like that is also what makes it so overwhelming, is like, we have too much choice, like with Coursera and all of these classes online and these courses you can take without literally leaving your house. You could learn about anything in the world. And I feel like that in and of itself is, at least for me, a very overwhelming thought, because I'm so curious about so much. Yeah. Really. Like that, I think, is like my I won't say like my biggest like downfall, but because it's a good thing, but it's definitely a struggle for me to like stay focused all the time. Like I look at, you know, our time on earth is so limited, and every second, every minute and hour counts. And, you know, when you're busy doing one thing, you're not doing something else, you know? So it's just has to be really purposeful, or you have to love what you're doing in that moment to make it all okay, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So now, is this what you do and all you do at this point in your career?
No, no, it's not. I've always kind of dabbled in a lot of different things. I think that being an independent artist, let's say just in the artist space, for example, in the music and performance world, I've done a lot, because, you know, living in a downtown core and having to pay rent, like you can't just rely on being, you know, an artist if you want to eat and have a roof over your head.
Right.
So I knew that and decided to use, you know, my vocal abilities in different ways. So I joined an entertainment company, like a live entertainment company, and I would do, you know, I had residencies and restaurants and bars, and would do festivals and weddings, corporate events, anthems, like wherever a singer was needed, I would be there. I also got into voice acting, and I took some private lessons there to go into that, which I absolutely love. I love those kind of jobs. And they're sporadic, right? I work in the gig economy. So that basically means that usually the job opportunities are a little bit out of your control.
Right.
So you kind of have to put yourself out there in so many different ways. So there's voice acting. I taught voice for a bit. I did a lot. And of course, you know, in the dry seasons, I would work, you know, I worked in restaurants. I've done a lot. My world right now is actually music and dogs. So I am the co-founder of a company, like a wellness nutrition company in the pet space called Healthy Bud. It's kind of recent. It's been in the last year. I do. I'm the co-founder, and I work mostly involved in brand and creative development and social media management. So that's kind of like the stable part of my life, believe it or not, even though that's also a startup. But it really, there's a lot of crossover in what I've learned as an independent artist, you know, learning about community online and having to do my own social media creatives, and how do you engage with people? How do people like to be engaged with? So I bring a lot of that, that experience and the ability to be in front of the camera and all of that into that space. So really during the day, I'm working on, I would say, you know, in the 9 to 3 category when things aren't crazy, of course. I'm working on that, and I'm doing music, you know, at night, on the weekends, and having that balance. Like I'm a Libra, so it's always been such a thing in my life where I can't put all of my eggs just in my music career. I found that it put so much pressure on me to succeed that it was counterproductive. So I've always had something to ensure that I could pay rent and survive, and made sure that it was something that I also loved and spoke to the skills that I have. And it's always involved in like in the creative space. So that's kind of, I guess, the blanket title for me. I consider myself a creative artist. Yeah, singer and
performer,
songwriter. Yeah, performer, you know, whatever, all of that stuff. I think we're so multifaceted. I struggle with that a lot, actually, is how, like, today society really makes you feel like you are one thing. You are your profession. You are your job title. And that's so lacking. Like, people are so multifaceted and complex and have so many different skills. And there is a way to do more than one thing in your life. And for me, my biggest fear is doing one thing my entire life. Like that, you know, that for me is scary. There's so much to explore, and this, you get so much better at one thing when you learn about something else too, because they always end up speaking to each other. What I've picked up, you know, in my background's actually in architecture. So what I picked up there, oh my God, has helped me in ways that I could have never imagined. I've done a lot of different things in my life.
That's great.
So far. Yeah, it's a little crazy. Too. Yeah, it's for sure. It's amazing. Life is fascinating. It takes so many funny turns, and yeah, as long as you love what you're doing when you're doing it, then that's what matters.
I actually, that was probably 5 or more years ago at this point, but I was thinking about all the different things I've done to earn money in my life.
For sure.
And I started chronologically. I did a post where I listed them chronologically.
Yeah.
And it was a long list.
For sure. That's so cool, though. What was the craziest one you've done?
Well, one of the most interesting ones that I've done that most people find kind of fun is I drove a Zamboni.
Oh my gosh.
I did that for about a year.
That's amazing. Which kind of like arena was it?
Well,
like
it was arena? It was a rink in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida, where they had club teams play, that adult leagues, hockey leagues, and kids hockey leagues. And early in the morning, they had figure skating. And then on weekends, they'd have open skating.
Wow. You know? Cool.
So I drove the Zamboni there. I was one of 2 Zamboni drivers.
That's very cool.
And that was that was the last job I had before I started what became my career, which is working in the substance abuse treatment industry. I'm an addictions counselor by day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's what I do. And this podcast is kind of, I chose authenticity because I wanted to be able to draw on the resources I've kind of garnered through my career. I've met a lot of authors and therapists and so, you know, authenticity, I mean, addiction essentially is a betrayal of oneself, you know, it's self-destructive. Mm-hmm. So it just, that kind of seemed like a way to fit it all together without making it about addiction and making it a little more universal. And,
for sure.
And then also, you know, I was someone as a kid who, I had enough of a deficiency in self-esteem that I wasn't going to, the discouragement I got, from important people in my life, from doing certain things, writing and, you know, I allowed it to steer my choices.
For sure.
And, and I lost myself. You know, and that's,
yeah.
That to me, that, you know, this is really on my heart to this topic, you know, being tapped into your inner voice and listening to it, you know.
And sometimes it's not always our best friend or our biggest supporter, but, it's getting to know that little voice and figuring out how to either tame it or, you know, like work with it and not have it work against you. It's difficult. You know, I struggle with that too. You know, it's, especially as an artist, because I feel like artists are I don't want to generalize, but I can speak just for myself, like very in tune and in touch with their emotions. And the inner voice and their intuition, and it can get a little crazy sometimes, you know, especially it's such an uncertain industry, the music industry, and there's it can be hard to remember why you're doing it and to keep pushing forward when it seems like things aren't going how you would, you know, planned. I mean, who can plan anyway?
Well, and you know, the next episode that comes out that I just have been working on in the last day or so is with the guy. We talk about how, you know, the idea of being practical. I mean, we get that from our parents and the people who love us that, I mean, I grew up in an environment where, you know, it was great to be artistic and all, but then, you know, you got to be an adult at some point. You got to let go of those dreams and be an adult and be practical and get a real job and, you know, and you know, people I love were kind of looked down upon because they wanted to be musicians and weren't willing to let go of that and completely sell out. And that's right. Kind of heartbreaking, you know, it's really heartbreaking.
Of course.
And so that's one of the reasons why, because of my own experience and my own difficulty, like listening to my own inner voice, for that reason, I've always admired artists because I felt like you have to have courage to follow through with it. So, so that's one of the reasons why I really wanted to talk to artists a lot on this podcast. Sure. You know, I do think it takes a sort of, I don't know, stick-to-itiveness, determination. You know, to just go for it. And, you know, because we're, in our culture, we're encouraged to be practical and, instead of true to ourselves.
Yeah. I think that really resonates with me because similar to you, I was raised in a home that definitely supported me, but they also instilled the importance of practicality. There's no doubt. That's actually how I ended up in architecture school. if I had it my way, like I actually only applied to Berkeley coming out of SAGEP. I knew what I wanted. I didn't want to do anything else. And my parents were like, there's no chance. A, you might not get in. B, we probably won't be able to afford it, but like go for it. And then what, you know? So I definitely was raised with that as well. And I feel like I have that in me till today, which is why that aspect of balance is just, you know, despite the fact that I am so connected to my astrological sign of the Libra and it's all about that, right? And that is like the driving force of my life is balance. And for me, that's how I find the courage and the happiness too. Like I feel like no matter what you're doing, if you don't have balance, things can go so crazy, you know, whether it's balance, like getting in your exercise or, you know, not going too deep in one thing and, you know, not looking at the other side of a picture too. You know what I mean? Like you have to, when you're so into, you put all your eggs in one basket, you're only thinking about one thing. Like, how do you have perspective? How do you, it's hard to stay healthy in that way. So
But the flip side of that Libra thing is indecision.
Oh my gosh. Yes. So there's that, right? And you're kind of like, there's indecision. It's funny because I'm so decisive about some things and very indecisive about others. Like me at a restaurant ordering from a menu is hilarious. It's like, but they all look so good. And like, I don't know what I want right now. I'm very indecisive about things that don't actually really matter. So I'm grateful for that. But when it comes to like, I know what I want. I know what I want to do. I know what I need. And like, I'm actually good in that sense, but on the note of practical, like passion versus practicality is like my life in a nutshell. That's what it's been so far as an artist. I am so determined and driven to show other artists out there that you can actually do both. There is a way to be resourceful as a creative and not be a starving, struggling artist. You know, we're human beings are so capable and we're all talented. It's just, it's a mix of how aware you are and of your talents and how confident you can be to let those talents kind of grow and nurture and to nurture them. But I'm rambling a bit, but basically, like, for me as an independent artist, balance is everything. And finding that fine line between passion and practicality is what's enabled me to keep moving in the forward direction. And that's where voice acting came in. That for me was a practical decision, even though that industry is so difficult too, but it's a different stream. It's like, well, if you're good at being on the microphone, what other things can you do to increase your chances of getting some income in different ways in a realm that is relevant, right? So, you know, you're good on stage, go and join a company that, yeah, a lot of singers don't want to do the wedding gigs. I get that. Like, there is an ego thing there. It's like, I'm an artist. It's my favorite job. Love it. I love it. I absolutely, you have an adoring crowd. You're playing the best songs of all time. And you're having a party. You're getting paid to have a party. Now, it is so much, it's very difficult. I'm not going to lie. I've done 4-hour sets practically straight, including sometimes a hora and a this and a that. And it's extremely exhausting. But that connection for me with the crowd and the energy is like, that's my drug. It's the best. So I realized it put a roof over my head. It pays so well. Decently well, I should say, depending on the event. And once you do enough of them, it's like, wow, I am making a living using my voice. Like, this is so cool. So there's ways to, if you're open and you don't let your ego kind of get in the way, like, there's ways to be practical as an artist, as a creative. Yeah. You have to want to go there and not want to bask in the, like, but I'm an artist and I'm only going to write my own songs.
Well, and you know, for me, I got this as a teenager. Well, what are you going to do? Work at McDonald's so you can write? I mean, that question was actually posed to me, and there was a limited idea of what it meant to be a writer. When
for sure.
In reality, what I learned is that practically every job I have had to some degree, I've gotten because I knew how to write. I was writing and I was making a living and I was paying my bills and it was so much of what's possible or what we believe is possible for ourselves as we are emerging into adulthood is dependent upon the limited view of our parents of what is possible.
For sure. Yeah. And the people around you and your environment, and what you were really taught growing up. I find now that I'm really adulting, whether or not I like to admit it, I start to realize like how much of your childhood and your support system or lack of support system plays a role in your ability to really thrive later on. Or, you know, I believe everyone can thrive, but it's some people have it a little bit easier than others, you know? So,
well, and a lot of it boils down to the beliefs that you have and the underlying beliefs that, you know, we really have to kind of pick apart to understand why we do and don't do certain things. Yeah.
And a lot of that's rooted in confidence, you know,
or fear. Yeah. Yeah.
Confidence I mean, on the positive side, it's confidence, or on the opposite end of that spectrum, it's, you know, fear, insecurity.
Well, and you know, those parents who are telling us to be practical, I mean, that is the motive is good, but it's really them projecting their fears.
Their own fears. Exactly.
Which are fears. Yeah. They're not reality. They're fears.
Right.
But they're very real to them, you know? So do you have, what are some goals that you have? Where's this going? Besides, so I assume you're doing an album, whatever this is with the British guy is going to become an album, right?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah. One day soon. Yeah.
And what else? What else is on the horizon for you?
I think that, what I'm really working towards right now is building an authentic, tight-knit community of, I don't want to say like fans, because I hate that word, but people who can see themselves in what I'm doing and love the music and want to be part of the journey and want to connect with me. So I'm really looking to kind of build that kind of fan base, that circle of people that, you know, the audience that is online, right? Mm-hmm. And to really build my brand in a way that's really like tangible and easily like consumable by, you know, the world. It's really all about how you put yourself out there. Like I can make all of this cool stuff from my house, but you know, then how do you convey it? What you make is only what you end up conveying, right? Yeah. So there's a lot of work to be done in, you know, what does that brand feel like? How does it make other people feel? What do I stand for? Like, how do I package it all? Mm-hmm. The stage name Ver is fairly recent. It's recent with the release of this album. So it's kind of, that's my project is, mm-hmm. you know, I look at the artist Ver as that's a brand. That's its project. How do I share mm-hmm. what Ver stands for? What she creates, and how do I find the people? Like, how do I find my tribe doing mm-hmm. that? So that's kind of my goal right now. And to keep writing, I want to build the catalog, of music right now. It's a really introspective time. As I was saying before, it's a really unique time where I, for the first time in a while, I'm not thinking so much about paying rent because I've, you know, that my living situation has changed from due to COVID and I'm kind of back in my hometown and it's just a really unique time. So I'm trying to focus on just being fully creative and focused for the next little while and see where that takes me and, you know, keep doing things like this and meeting people from around the world through their love of music.
Well, your brand, I mean, I think for what it's worth, I feel like you have something there.
Because I appreciate that. Well,
that's part of what drew me to you, honestly. That's, I mean,
thanks. How did you find me, by the way? I don't know if I asked you that.
I don't know how I originally found you on Instagram. I know you, I've been following you for a while, but I recently saw you because I think you must have done some sort of collaboration with Audient.
Cool.
And I have been you know, I've been looking for a piece of equipment and, you know, I've been looking at a couple of their products and
nice.
So after Googling that, I think then I go on Instagram and of course Audient is going to pop up and there you are.
Oh my God. I love the internet sometimes.
I don't always love that, but
that's the key word is sometimes.
Yeah.
But sometimes. It's crazy. It is. Like, and that's part of it too is like, how do you strategically like get yourself out there? Like yeah. there's a reason like you should tag random things like Audient. Like if I have a, right. you know, if I'm doing a cover and I used an Audient interface, I'm going to tag right. it because right. maybe Tom will find me. And
right.
Post,
well, you know? It worked. Yeah. Yeah.
It's hilarious.
But
it's amazing.
You know, one of the things that, in terms of how I want to be perceived, like the way that I look, just, in life mm-hmm, is mm-hmm. elegant. You know, if people describe me, I hope at some point in my life that's, they see me that way. And that's nice. What I think about when I see, well, the name, the photos, the sound, I mean, all cool. of it.
That's interesting.
That's the Thank word you. That comes up for me. Elegance.
I love that. I'm going to take that with me.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's there. You might as well own it, right?
Well, it's so interesting how, like, I feel I was reading somewhere that, like, your brand is kind of like the intersection point between, like, who you think you are, how other people perceive you, and, like, the little, like, overlap in that, like, Venn diagram or whatever mm-hmm. it is, right? Like, so I don't know if I would have said elegant, but I will take it. And maybe now I'm going to incorporate it a little bit more.
Yeah, be more aware of it. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah,
I mean, you know, cool. Your voice is just beautiful and
thank you.
Soulful. And
thank you.
Are you a jazz fan? Have you?
Yeah. I mean, I would say like jazz pop more than jazz. Jazz. I love jazz, but I don't consider myself like a, you know, a jazz aficionado. Like I don't know all of, you know, the standards and, but I love jazz. It's, oh my gosh, jazz is so soulful and so raw. And I definitely get inspiration from jazz. Absolutely.
Yeah. Music is just so there's so much of it. And one of the things I love now is, how easy it is to, first of all, access, but also if you're an artist, the ways that you can get yourself out there
for sure
for people to hear you. I mean, I don't know who I was talking to about this the other day, but I mean, when I was a kid, like I had a cassette player and the favorite song, I would wait for it to come on the radio and start recording it just the right time. And you know, that's how that's how you, if you didn't buy the record, that's how you got songs. I mean, now it's just like you Google and there are any number of platforms where you can listen to it.
Exactly.
It's just wild. It's so accessible, but still, I mean, I'm an analog guy, you know, I mean, I buy records.
Yeah, there's something amazing about when it's tangible, right? Like I think there's a difference. I think there's also a huge difference in if you make music, they call it like in the box, basically like just in your computer without using real instruments, using virtual instruments, and then like out of the box, so real drums and real guitar solos, and there's something there. Like music is energy. Right. Yeah. And if you didn't physically pluck the string, like that's why I think live music is so powerful. Mm-hmm. And with everything that's happening now, I know that we're heading into a VR world. And I personally can't see a world without live music. I think it would be a tragedy, honestly.
Oh, yeah.
So yeah, I feel you. Like there's something about analog and I didn't even like, for being obviously honest here, like I didn't grow up with such a crazy appreciation for analog. I was more into singing. I wasn't like one of those, you know, techie, like, oh my gosh, like I gotta get my, like, you know, my 4-track like tape recorder. Like I wasn't doing that. I was in the CD era and the plastic crappy things like that came and
better
went,
than
right?
cassettes though.
For sure. But I grew up with cassettes and then went into CDs, but I don't know. I developed a really big appreciation for, I studied audio production. Actually, I moved to Toronto for, you know, a couple of years back, to study audio production to kind of better help myself, express myself musically, in a more direct way. Like I found that if I wanted to be an artist, I had to be able to understand how music's made from a technical standpoint. It drove me up the walls to be in a studio with producers who basically made the music for me because I couldn't articulate. Like I didn't understand what was going on, from a technical standpoint. And it took one time for me to go through that experience and say, no, I'm going to go learn all of this for myself. Because especially, I won't get into this too deeply, but in the music industry, it's in the production world, it's definitely, you know, a boy's playground. It's not, there's a huge, and I felt I was the only girl in my class in studying audio production. And I can be the first to tell you that there is, it's a little bit of a gender inequality. I want to say inequality. That's not the right word, but it's not the easiest. You know, people will assume that you don't know how to do things, right? Mm-hmm. Like just small subtleties like that. Like if you're a woman, then, oh, like, let me show you how to like, you know, turn that knob. So part of it is just like, you know, as I want to inspire other women to go for that. Go study it yourself. Go learn it for yourself so that you're not ever dependent on somebody else to either make creative decisions for you or tell you what you can or can't do. Like, I have some hilarious stories. Now they're funny because they're in the past, but like, couldn't believe it in the moment that this was actually, you know, being said. But it's crazy how much of a, how male dominated the production space is. And that's where I learned, like in that school, I learned to really appreciate the analog world. Like I was working at one of those like SSL desks that like they used in those massive, you know, recording studios. So it's all like electrical, right? Like it would take like soldering classes and like I was, you know, doing the dirty work. And it was so cool, like to actually understand music from that standpoint, even though I was like, and it was a lot of fun. Like the whole like male, female imbalance, it didn't ruin my experience there in any way, shape or form. But I also am the type of person where like, I don't like fight those things. I just kind of laugh at them and just prove like you prove them wrong with your actions. You know, I'm not going to sit there and just like weep about it. Like whatever, that's the way it is. It's been like that for a long time. The best way to kind of fight that stereotype is to just keep doing it and encourage other people to do it. And soon enough, there's always going to be, you know, there'll be more women in the studios just taking part, more women being nominated for, you know, Grammys on the production side, right? So it's just a question of it taking time. I went on a really big tangent there, but that's like, okay. it's so part of who I am as an artist. And also my brand online is like the DIY method and like showing tips on how can you do your own covers, record them from home? Like, how can you make music from home? Like, how do you mix music? How do you, you know, do all of like the tech kind of things and know when to ask for help, know when you should outsource and when you're being taken advantage of, which happens all the time, when it comes to pricing too, right?
Yeah.
If you can understand kind of what the going rates are and also what goes into the process, you can better fairly assess if you're being ripped off or not, right? So all of the, you know, the more knowledge you can kind of suck up and absorb, and, you know, you can do that by talking to people you know or, you know, just kind of digging around online. Well, the better, and
this podcast, like I figured it out that, you know, I YouTube videos, like, you know, I figured it out how to do it, you know, and taught myself how to use Audacity.
Well, you found Audient, no?
Yeah. Well, yeah. And that was from another podcaster. Not yet, but, I interviewed another podcaster a while back and she recorded her end. And sent it to me. And
I was actually going to ask if you wanted me to do that.
That'd be great.
Professional setup, but I didn't do it. So you'll have, I hope this recording is good enough.
No, it'll be fine. It'll be fine. Okay, but she did. And I didn't use it because I don't have the ability with the equipment I have to do two separate tracks. That's part of the reason why I'm looking at another piece of equipment. But she had an Audient device.
Nice.
I asked her what it was she was using and she told, you know, and
awesome.
Yeah. So that's how I knew about that. And so
if you ever need any, you know, insight or advice into some of, you know, some things that you're looking for, then you can reach out anytime. You know,
well, I mean, the thing is my little setup that I have here, it works for me and it sounds okay. So like,
awesome.
I'm afraid. I bought another device a while back and it just wasn't any good. And I ended up taking it back. You know, it looked like something that would work great, but the noise floor, which I don't even really know. I kind of know what it means, but I couldn't get the noise out of it. You know, I mean, I just, no matter what I did. So anyway, listening to hers, it was so clean.
Yeah,
I just,
for sure.
Yeah. And she said that it was an Audient ID4 and that was so, but
there's lots of ways to actually get clean recordings on, on a really small budget. So we can definitely chat about that.
Yeah, I would love to. And I'm, you know, another microphone. I mean, there are a few things. And I recently bought one of the little, they have these little semicircular sound things.
Yeah. Reflectors, like the vocal reflectors to kind of keep the sound in one spot and not, cool.
I'm not using that now, but I have one.
Well, there, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it makes a huge difference, but.
For sure.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I'll take all the help I can get. But my point in bringing that up is, you know, you look online, there are podcast coaches who, you know, like you could charge you $5,000 to like tell you what equipment to buy.
For
you know, I mean, it's like to your point that if you don't know what you're doing and if you don't know enough about what you don't know, then you can really end up, and this, like I initially spent about $140 on equipment. And I ended up going out and buying a better microphone and that was it. You know, I mean, I've, for the most part, that's what I've used and I figured out how to make it work. But you know, I've also gradually been making little improvements and I mean, it's
nice. Amazing.
Yeah. This has been a blast. And, awesome. You know, it was, one of the things you're talking about, like the struggle of being an artist and how, you know, the practical aspects of it and, you know, the whole idea of being the starving artist. I mean, that's a little dramatic and I think it's doesn't serve us well, that a stereotype. But I will say, you know, this project, I mean, I walked away from, I had a contract that ended and just decided, you know, I'm not going to go get another job doing what I don't want to do. If I'm for not going to do it now, when am I going to do it? And,
absolutely.
And it got to a point where I struggled enough that I demonstrated to myself the depth of my commitment.
That
is one of the effects that starving artist thing, because what's really more realistic about that stereotype is that probably successful artists have little periods of time that they go through
of
that and not an entire career, you know? And I went through a period where, you know, it was really by the seat of my pants and, but it also, it gave me an opportunity to show myself how committed I was to following my inner voice, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
And it kind of galvanized everything and it made it more real and alive and all that stuff. So.
Yeah, it gives you a sense of appreciation also for where you are right now when you know how far you've come, you know?
Yeah.
We're all going to go through the wave, you know? There's no low without a high and no high without a low. So.
Well, and it's really exciting to do something like that because you don't know what's going to happen. And the other day I was thinking about, you know, I knew that there were a few people that I wanted to interview for this podcast and that, you know, the people who I knew personally that I wanted to be on the show, that part was easy. But, you know, what really was going to be, you know, what's it going to be like when I talk to someone I don't know?
Well, what's it like?
How's that going to go?
How did it go?
Well, I mean, I found myself the first episode that I did with someone I didn't know was, with this artist in Texas named Brian Phillips. And, I found myself like 20 minutes into the conversation thinking, you know, I couldn't have planned this any better.
Right.
He was the perfect person. You know, he talked about the kinds of things that I talk about, you know, I mean, he just was a perfect guest. I mean,
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I just knew then, like, this is going to be okay. Like, this is, for sure. This is spiritually, things are all lining up because I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. That's what it felt like. I'm in the right place. So
that's amazing.
And yeah, and I just kept going. I've had a lot of guests that I've just found on Instagram.
Cool. And that's the way people connect today. That's how I've done collaborations that way. I've gotten jobs that way. It's all, you know, for me, humans were meant to connect with people, and there's just a different landscape now, but like connecting can happen in so many different unconventional ways. And at the onset, I was more hesitant to really embrace like the Instagram culture because it felt fake. It felt like vain. Like it just didn't like work for me. And then I realized, you know, there's people behind these screens. Like that's where they are. Yeah. So if you kind of reject it, you miss out. Yeah. And that's just the way it is, especially right now. I mean, I'm craving some like real like, you know, performance connection. Like it was such a drastic change when COVID hit. Like it was a night and day kind of change. I was working all the time in events. So it went from like, you know, nonstop performances to literal like silence in like the forest. Mm-hmm. So I'm ready for people to kind of act like a functioning society again, you know, a real society where there's culture happening in the streets and there's, you know, events, and I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I've been pretty careful with the whole COVID thing and just recently have started to let up a little bit. And I attended an event last Thursday, week ago tonight.
Oh, risque.
This event, it was like a networking thing, and they went to great care to be really, really safe. They actually, ordinarily it would have been one event that they split into three separate events so that they could have plenty of space and all that stuff. And, you know, long story short, Monday rolls around and I find out the person who I sat next to at dinner tested positive. Yeah.
Oh God.
So then I mean, I've been tested twice this week. So, I mean, I'm negative. I'm fine, but you know, it freaked me out a little bit at first. It's just a different world. It really is. And I'm tired of it too. I'm ready.
Yeah. We're ready.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, well, a couple things about this. First of all, when we get back to some semblance of normalcy, whatever that's going to look like, I think the connection stuff we're going to appreciate a lot more.
For sure. And that's not something you forget how to do. Like, that's for me, like, just part of being a human, you know?
Yeah.
That's what separates us from, like, you know, the animal kingdom, you know? Like, we have the ability to really, you know, connect through our, you know, just energy.
But then also, like, this has given us an opportunity to connect with ourselves.
Exactly.
It's forced us to. Yeah. A lot of people who just don't, you know, never bothered to do that have kind of been forced to, or else they resist it and they're really, really mad.
Yeah, exactly. Which
I hope that's not what they do, but I think a lot of people, at least in the States, are doing that. But no, this to me is like an opportunity for us to make everything better. You know,
for sure.
It's sad to me how many people have died. It's, you know, the what's happening in the States, it just makes me sick. But and it doesn't seem to be getting any better anytime soon. It breaks my heart that people aren't more, don't care more that a quarter million people have died. It's more than any other significant event in American history, any war or anything. Right. And people just act like it's not even happening.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, this has been great. So, you know, you're fighting the good fight. You're going after it. You're being true to yourself. Yeah. It's awesome. It's great. And I look forward to watching what happens.
Oh, the pressure is on. No, I'm kidding.
Seriously? No, I mean, it's awesome. I know whatever it is, it's going to be great. I mean, it seems apparent. Yeah. So, all right. Yeah, so
thank you.
When you look back on the course of your life, when was a time that the younger Vare needed a word of advice or some support? When would that have been? And what would you go back and say to her now?
I feel like that's something. I feel like I'm always ready to to get a word of support. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, we all need support.
For sure. No, in all seriousness, I think it would have been when I actually had to turn down going to Berkeley, to work so hard to just get in and just wanted to be there so badly. And then in the end, I had to decline it. And I think I would have told myself, you know, everything happens for a reason. I would have needed the same person to tell me that when my grandfather passed away, and I felt so lost. I think the main thing that I would tell my younger self is that really everything happens for a reason. There is a plan there. Things just make sense later on. You just have to trust that. And, you know, if you stick it out and you keep your head up, you'll be able to look back and be like, oh, okay, now I know why that happened. It led me here. It brought me to this. Or it's just, when you have that faith, it makes things a little bit lighter, I find. So that's what
I say. So when the record comes out, will you come back?
Oh, 100%. Of course.
Don't forget the little people.
Oh my God. There's no such thing as little people. We're all the same size, you know? And I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. You'll definitely, you know, we'll stay connected. Keep following. I'll do the same. And I really appreciate you reaching out to me.
Well, thank you.
Awesome.
Thanks for listening to The Path to Authenticity. If you'd like to learn more about our guest, you can find links in the show notes or visit our website at thepathtoauthenticity.com. If you're interested in becoming a sponsor, if you have a suggestion for a topic, or you know someone who would make a great guest, email the show at thepathtoauthenticity@gmail.com. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts. If you know someone else who would enjoy the show, or even just a particular episode, please share it with them. Every little bit helps. If you're not already a subscriber, please consider becoming one wherever it is you choose to listen. You can find the show on Patreon, where by becoming a patron, you can hear episodes before they're released publicly. You can gain access to supplemental content. There are other benefits in the various tiers. Visit patreon.com/thepathtoauthenticity. Join our Facebook community or follow the show on Instagram, both at The Path to Authenticity. We also have a YouTube channel. You can connect with us on Twitter or Pinterest. To hear the songs from this and every episode, you can find The Path to Authenticity playlist on Spotify. Obviously, there are a lot of ways you could be spending your time, so I appreciate you spending some of it here with me. I'm Tom Gentry. Thanks for listening. Be nice.
You did great, honeybee.
The Path to Authenticity is powered by Equivox. For digital marketing and web design services, visit equivox.com.